Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio on the magical Isle of Vashon. My greetings today go out to all of Coast Guard people, all of us who have in the past worn the shield, who wear it today, and all of those young people that will wear it tomorrow and days after that. And in particular, because I have been advised by Captain O'Brien, isn't that amazing that he is the one that told me that today is another one of the Coast Guard birthdays, that today in 1915, the Revenue Cutter Service and the Life-Saving Service were combined to form what we now call today the United States Coast Guard. We, of course, trace our roots back to 1790 when Alexander Hamilton motivated President Washington to sign legislation which established the Revenue Cutter Service. So we are today, as the Coast Guard, 110 years old since 1915. There is a history of the Coast Guard, which was one of the books that was issued to me when I was a cadet, almost the first day that I was a cadet at the academy, and it was by a Coast Guard senior officer by the name of Stephen Hadley Evans, and Evans wrote a book about the Coast Guard history up until 1915. And that is not my book for today. I'm just throwing it out there so that if anybody wants to do some digging and find the Coast Guard history by Stephen Hadley Evans, I wish them well, because it is probably pretty obscurely hidden down at the bottom of somebody's sea bag along with clothes stops. The medical list today has a number of additions and unhappily no subtractions. Or happily no subtractions for anyone crossing the bar. That part is certainly true. But none by people who have returned to full duty. So my greetings, first of all, go out to my Army friend Jay, who lives here on the magical Isle of Vashon, was a platoon leader and a company commander in Vietnam, and has been struggling and having a terrible, terrible fight and battle, which he is overcoming with cancer, which has lodged itself in his mouth and throat. He's had some, I don't know how many appointments, I don't know how many infusions. I had a signal from him over the week, and I am just in awe, if your captain is ever in awe of anything, at his fortitude, his bravery, and his determination, and that of his wife, Raina. Jay and Raina have been friends ever since I've lived on the island. We've worked together on a number of different things for the good of the island community, and it is my hope and my wish and would be my command, if I could command these things, that all of this would be lifted off of his shoulders and that would come to a proper and happy conclusion. Another one is my friend Dwayne, who is a Navy veteran and who is yesterday was scheduled to have some serious surgery. And another one from one of my master chiefs on the Coast Guard Channel. In my own case, I paid a visit to the ever-lovely Vivian, and we decided to keep Mr. Foley as part of my equipment issue and let the chemicals that have been injected into me do their work for another 2 weeks. So I have an appointment around, I think, the 13th or 14th of February. And no matter what, Mr. Foley is going to come out and we are going to see if I can drain in the legitimate and normal way. If not, then Mr. Poley goes back in and we let work the chemicals for a further period of time. All of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list are always in the palm of my hand, and several of the ones that I have listed today are really serious. And I am counting on, it is my hope and my wish, and certainly my command, that each one of those people be fully cared for, and are all of them are veterans. All four of us are veterans. And that we're being properly looked after by the medical profession, and all of you are in the palm of my hand. And next week, I look for and hope for great reports for all cases. Greenland has been in the news quite a bit lately, and I have a Greenland story, and it has to do with the Greenland Home Rule government. I am passing over on purpose any commentary about how we deal with the Danes and with Greenland. Denmark is a very small country, but it is also a NATO ally. And we have had a presence in Greenland for many, many years. We, the United States, have had a presence in Greenland for many, many years. I've not done enough reading. I need to talk with my friend, colleague, Dr. Professor and Captain Lawson Brigham about the both strategic and tactical significance of Greenland. It remains for me at this point anyway to make no further commentary on that part of it, but to tell you my Greenland story. So all of you know that my last job in the Coast Guard, I was the ice boss for that wonderful commandant and great gentleman in our service, Admiral Jim Gracie. And I had one of the jobs that I had was to maintain liaison with the State Department. And to that end, the State Department liaison officer was an officer who had been my operations officer in Northwind in the Antarctic. I had a telephone call from him, and he said, "Captain Joe, the secretary wants to do something really good. The Greenland Home Rule government, through the embassy in Copenhagen, has asked if we could relocate a herd of muskox." I said, "Dick," that was his first name. I said, "Dick, I will come over immediately. Let's sit down and talk about this." And I went over to Maine State, and I sat down with the desk that included Greenland and included Denmark. And the mission was laid out for me that the Greenland Home Rule government had wanted to move a herd of muskox from one place in Greenland to another place in Greenland, and the only way that it could be done was with an icebreaker. And we just happened to have an icebreaker, and that icebreaker was working up in Greenland, and could it be made available? Now, I had never before seen muskox. I only had a idea of how big they were, how much space they required, and how many of them there were. But I said, "Well, I will go back to Washington, consult with my staff, and get their opinions and advice, and we'll see what we can do." And I was told that the Secretary of State was really interested in doing something effective for Denmark and for the Greenland Home Rule government. It turns out that the ship that was available was my old home, Northwind. And her captain was a friend of many, many years standing. I had been a part of his selection, in fact, to command Northwind. So I sent a signal. I don't remember whether we talked on the telephone. I don't know remember exactly what the communications line were, but I said, Captain Northwind, I'm going to hand you a mission that is going to be a challenge to all of your organizational skills. I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to write an op order for you, which will direct you to pick up this herd of muskox, and I suggest that they all be quartered on the open area underneath the flight deck. To make all of this go together, I flew to Copenhagen and met with the Greenland Home Rule government representatives who were directly involved in the move of the herd of muskox. Now, if you look up muskox in a source that has a photograph of them, you'll see that they are very large. And because of their size and the amount of food they eat, they also generate a huge amount of detritus. And I knew how immaculate the decks of Northwind, even under the flight deck, in that open area under the flight deck, were. However, a mission described and one which we accepted was one that therefore had to be accomplished. I flew to Copenhagen, and the meeting place was not in our embassy. It was in a building that was used by the Greenland Home Rule government in Copenhagen. I arrived there at 10 o'clock in the morning, which was the meeting time, and sitting in the middle of the table were a number of bottles of aquavit. Aquavit is made in Denmark. It is made in a city called Aalborg up in the north, and the bottles were full. And there were myself representing the Secretary of State, representing the United States government, representing the Commandant of the Coast Guard, and representing the captain in Northwind. The caps came off the tops of the bottles at 10 o'clock, or about 10:02, and the large glasses, tumblers of aquavit, were soon being passed around the table. I was in those days an enthusiastic participant, and not wanting to offend my hosts, I joined them in the consumption of a considerable amount of Aalborg aquavit. During this time, we came to an agreement that the Coast Guard cutter Northwind would load, first of all, a team of muskox handlers, and would load the necessary dunnage to set up the area under the flight deck to be a holding pen for this large group of muskox. The operations order was cut. It was issued to the Coast Guard cutter Northwind. Northwind's captain delivered himself privately of some choice remarks to me based on our long friendship, and publicly his saying, "Aye, aye, sir, I will carry out my orders," which he did. So after we did a number on a considerable amount of Aalborg aquavit, an agreement was reached as to how all these things would happen. They did indeed happen. When the mission was completed and the muskox were delivered along with their handlers and cleaners, one of the requirements was that they would clean the area that was used by the muskox, and I know not at this point whether or not every single bit of muskox detritus was cleaned from that deck. What I do know is that when the mission was completed, her captain delivered himself of further choice remarks directed to me as an old friend. And I was happy to accept those. In the meantime, the Greenland Home Rule government had accomplished what they wanted. The ambassador from the United States to the Kingdom of Denmark got what he wanted. The muskox got relocated. And the only one who didn't get what he wanted was the captain in Northwind. But the job was done. Mission accomplished. Well done, Northwind. In the meantime, Denmark now has committed about $2 billion in American money. What does that translate into in Danish kroner? Denmark is not in the, it is a member of the European Union, but it is not in the Eurozone, which is also true of Sweden. What that translates into in Danish kroners, I don't know, but whatever it is, it's about $2 billion in American money to Arctic defense, which includes three new Arctic naval vessels. Are these to be icebreakers? Probably not. Are they to be ice-strengthened ships? Probably so. Will they be armed? Almost certainly. But because they will be ice-strengthened ships rather than icebreakers, it is almost certain that they will be able to be constructed in a more timely manner than what it is taking us. As a parenthetical insertion, I picked up a piece not too long ago, a couple days ago, in which the commander-in-chief, the incumbent commander-in-chief, has said that we are going to order 40 heavy icebreakers. I note here that the word is order. Now, we can order all we want, but until we have the capacity to build, we're not going to see one, much less 40, of those ships. I take all of that with a considerable amount of frazzle ice. In a public service announcement, I talked last week about the Washington Poison Center poster contest for all children in Washington State from kindergarten all the way up through the 12th grade. And the deadline for submissions has been extended to the 14th of February. And anyone who has a child or a grandchild or a great-grandchild who would like to construct a poster for Mr. Yuck, the way you do it is to type into any decent search engine, Washington Poison Center Poster Contest, and it will bring up all of the information that you need in order to submit a poster entry. All of you know, or if you don't know, I'll tell you now, that I sit on the board which helps to manage Mr. Yuck. And I do this in particular because I have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and I want all of them to know all about Mr. Yuck. The book today is called Under the Tuscan Sun, and this book has been around for a long time, and it came to me in an interesting way. I was casting about through some of the things that were in Mary R.'s own bookcase, her own personal bookcase, of books that she was working on all the way up to the time of her death. And one of the books was Under the Tuscan Sun by Frances Mays, and I pulled it out, and I noticed that in the book, Mary R. had put a number of yellow stickies. And I was in particular curious as to what it was that caught her attention with this book, because the book itself got a great deal of attention. There was a movie made using the book as the basis. The subtitle is At Home in Italy. And I was interested in particular as to what it was that Mary R. had found an interesting enough that she would mark it with yellow stickies. And so part of it was for, there were some recipes. There are some recipes in the book. And I noticed that several of them were different kinds of things like pesto. And none of the recipes ever came to fruition that she had marked. But it was establishing a connection with her that I had not expected. And it was a poignant time. And so I decided to start the book and read it from the beginning. And I am about two-thirds of the way through it. And one of the places that Mary R. did not mark, but which I did, and which I'm going to talk about right now, was driving in Italy. And Francis talks about the age of Tuscany going all the way back to the Etruscans in B.C., and she points out that many of the towns in Tuscany have gone back to no motor cars. I've seen this happen in a number of towns in my own ancient part of the world, which is England and, in particular, Cambridgeshire, the ancient kingdom of Cambridgeshire, East Anglia. I've noticed that. And she talks about, and she tells a story about her husband, Ed, who drove with her riding in the right seat, their motor car into some of these ancient towns where the streets are the same size now as they were in Roman times, where the streets get narrower and narrower. And Ed had driven them into a couple of streets where they had to back out a long way under the guidance of a number of Italians who were being their pilots, which led me to tell a story of my own adventure in that regard. One time, Mary R. and I had decided to go to Cornwall, and we went to St. Ives, the ancient town of St. Ives. Now, the motor car that I had in England, in the UK, was a C-Class Mercedes that had been previously owned, and for English roads and compared to English vehicles, it was a large machine. And we drove all over England in that car, and we drove all over Europe in that car, as a matter of fact. It served me well, and I regretted when I left it behind, but that's another story for another time. So we're driving into St. Ives, and St. Ives is not only an ancient town, but it is a hill town, and up at the top of the hill was a car park. And the car park had a sign, and the sign said we urge you not to drive down into the town, but leave your motor car here, and there's a shuttle bus that goes back and forth between here and city center. And I passed by that sign and was headed down the hill, and Mary R. said something like, I hope you saw that sign. And would you not think it a good idea if you left our car up there and we rode the shuttle? And I said, no, we'll just drive right down into town. And we drove closer and closer, and the streets got narrower and narrower. And sure enough, we got all the way down to the waterfront. And I had managed to drive this Mercedes, this C-Class Mercedes, big car, into a cul-de-sac from which there was no turning around. No driveways, no turning around. Now, Mary R. had many, many virtues. And one of them was that in all of the years that we were together, she never once said, "See, I told you so." She never did that. And she didn't do it in St. Ives. But what she did say was something like, "Well, now you've gotten us in here, I await with barely concealed anticipation." She, by this time, had adopted a couple of my own sayings. "I await with barely concealed anticipation how you're going to get us out." In the meantime, a number of the good burgers of St. Ives had formed up. They were on either side of my C-Class Mercedes with sort of smirking Mary R. in the left seat because this was a right-hand drive car. She was in the left seat, and on the right seat and on the right door, on the left door, were all of these citizens of the ancient town of St. Ives. And all of them were giving me advice as to how I was going to extract myself from this situation into which I had now gotten myself. It was done the same way that porcupines make love, very carefully. And I don't know about this part, but for me, it was also very slowly, which meant that I had to endure a considerable amount of friendly and loving, but direct confrontation would be the right word, I suppose. Comments about Americans and big German cars getting down into these ancient, ancient streets and then needing help to get out. So that's my story about St. Ives. I recommend a visit to St. Ives. I recommend a visit to Cornwall. I recommend a visit to the United Kingdom. All of those things. And I do recommend that if you go to St. Ives or any other town that has a car park at the top of the hill and a sign that says, "We urge you to park here and ride the shuttle bus down into the city center," that you follow those instructions and you follow those wishes on the part of the city fathers. I have run out of time. I am going next week to include some of the New Year's logs. You all should know that aboard ship in the Coast Guard and in the Navy for, I don't know, maybe 100 years, 200 years, the first log of the new year is always written in verse. And in my ships, it was always not only written in verse, but I also wrote my night orders in verse. I had hoped to read a couple of them on this broadcast. I will do it next week, which means that all hands are expected, required. It is my wish, my hope, my desire, and would be my command that everybody who is listening to me today will be with me next week, because some of these verses are absolutely great, absolutely splendid. With that, this is your Captain Joe. Always watch the six of those for whom you are responsible. Always be that person who is kind and gracious to those around you? Because we are in a period right now in our national history where grace is really thin on the ice. I will do my part. I will do the best I can. And I urge it of all of you. Remember that a little bit of kindness and a little bit of grace goes a long, long way. And with that, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And this is, as always, your Captain Joe. I am on station and watching properly.